All right, as a fan pregame, it's Tuesday night, and we're up on Sportsnet Plus and Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next hour. Jay's back in action a little later this evening at home against the Orioles. We're going to chat with John Morosi about all that and more. And those White Sox. We got to talk about the White Sox. I know it's crazy to say, but we have to. In about 10 minutes.
The dastardly White Sox. So we'll get to them in a bit. It was a rough one, though, in Paris today for the Canadian men's national team. The dream is dead in the quarterfinals. We will discuss what went wrong and where this all goes next at 6:30 with Arash Madan.
Paris news that was positive was we got another gold in hammer throw. We are a hammer nation.
We throw
hammers well. Cameron Rogers making history, winning the gold for us. But unfortunately, kind of the shine is wearing off in terms of Paris right now because you talked about it yesterday. What is something we need to end this Olympic Games with? Maybe it was Canada basketball going to win a medal, and they are abruptly ended against France in the quarterfinals. So let's talk about
it. Yeah. I mean, I definitely feel stronger about that take now because you're right. It was harder to get excited about Cameron Rogers winning a gold medal because this was kind of the last crown jewel at the Olympics, I think, for Canada. And maybe we'll be surprised by Andre de Grasse. Maybe something will happen that will change that. But I couldn't help but looking at the larger implications when watching this kind of fall apart today for Canada, because it's not just about that team and not just about not getting a medal for that team, but it's a reflection of the entire Olympic bid for Canada. Mm-hmm. And this has not gone well from start to finish, even before the start with the Canadian women's team. And yeah, this is a really tough loss. I can't really remember the last time I was as rattled watching a loss, honestly. And we have a few that we can touch on and see if we can compare. But that was a really tough watch today. And it's an uncertain future, and it's a pretty certain result here for Canada just in general at Paris 2024. And it was a step back, frankly, in my opinion.
It's that famous saying, it's the hope that kills you. And I think that's where I felt the most positive about Canada turning the page and starting a new chapter with some of the best NBA talent. They had that amazing performance at FIBA, and you're like, this is something special. This team could do something special. You've got Shea, you've got RJ, you've got Dylan Brooks, and you had just a well-rounded cast that felt bought in. They felt like they really believed that they could go on and take on the Americans in the gold medal game. And to watch it fall short in a game that wasn't the way that I thought they would lose to France. You know, Wemby and Rudy Gobert combined for 6 points. Rudy Gobert barely touched the court.
Four minutes, was it?
Yeah. Wemby didn't do his regular Wemby scoring.
He was awful. I thought he was awful.
And so if you look at the way that they lost, and we can get into the foul discrepancy, which is something that a lot of people have noted online, and it's very accurate, the way that that home crowd was just willing France to continue to perform, it was just from start to finish sloppy, uninspired, and frankly, like embarrassing that Canada fell that short to France. And it's the easy thing to say is, well, look how good Canada basketball is right now, set up for 2018. But I don't know if that's the case. Like, that's 2028. That's still 4 more years of waiting and aging. And if Jamal Murray gets any older, I don't know how he's going to get any better.
Yeah, and he's still a young guy. I mean, Jamal Murray definitely front and center when it comes to the disappointment at least from an individual level. He was one of the few players worse than Victor Wembanyama. Maybe I'm being a little too harsh on Wemby, but yeah, they didn't take advantage of a night where the next best player in the world was anything but. Mm-hmm. It was a bunch of lesser known, no name guys.
And kudos to them. They're known now.
And coaching tactics that kind of just flummoxed Canada and got them in a position where they were in a hole that they couldn't scrape themselves out of. And yeah, I think there is an uncertain future. And that's really like the pain of all this is that it took so long to get here and it only comes around every 4 years. Now they're not guaranteed to be there in 4 years. They're going to have to fight their way back in. And yeah, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander will be 30 when the next Olympics rolls around, and he'll still be really good, probably his prime beginning now and will be towards the end of prime, so still like peak Shea over the next 5 years. But yeah, there's a good chance the best version of Shea in a Canadian jersey was this one. Jamal Murray will be 31. Dylan Brooks will be 32. Dwight Powell, Kelly Olynyk, Ken Burch, they'll be phased out, which means you got to replace bigs. Is Zach Edey going to be allowed to play next time?
Is he going to be there for sure?
Yeah, you definitely missed Zach Edey on a night like tonight. RJ Barrett will still be young. The Nemhards will be a big part of this. Benedict Mathurin, you know, Shaedon Sharpe. There are guys that are going to fill this roster out, but this felt like it could have been the best version, at least in terms of like this generation of the team. And I don't know where it leaves them now. And for that reason, we're going to look back on this thinking it was a major, major missed opportunity because nothing was promised before. Getting here seemed like something of a one-off, at least up until this point of history. And now I just don't know where it leaves them. And it leaves them without a medal. That's just flat out it.
And that was the bare minimum goal, to be on the podium and arguably trying to take down the Americans for gold. So you go home with nothing. And maybe some lessons learned. Okay, so you brought this question up off the air, and I think is a good one to pose to our audience. You can text us at 59590 with standard message and data rates may apply, or you can send us a tweet or whatever format of media people use now. Canada's loss to France today was as disappointing as a loss since what? This is Justin's great brainstorming. And so we've put a couple together. I mean, we're living in the moment of it. It was only a few hours ago, so maybe this ages poorly. But what was the first thing that came to your mind?
Well, this isn't how you felt while you were watching it thing, right? Like how I felt, excuse me,
well,
it seemed
emotional.
Like it was slipping away. I was pretty devastated, honestly. Like it was pretty bad. And I think the last time I felt that way was almost 10 years ago with the Blue Jays in the American League Championship Series against the Kansas City Royals, where I think there are a lot of parallels, right? Because when you're growing up, when I was a Blue Jays fan, it was like the thought of even going to the playoffs seemed impossible for a very long time. And all of a sudden they're there with this team that, you know, just went out and spent and brought in all this talent and were so exciting. And you had all these moments and it looked like it was an unstoppable force that you were behind. And then it just abruptly ended. And yeah, they went back the next year. They've been back since, but obviously times have changed a little bit in terms of like how easy it is to get in the playoffs, or easier, but it felt like a really like moment in time. This was one opportunity that you've never had before, and it should have been a better result than it was, just like this one, and it fell flat sort of unexpectedly. So that's really the last time I think I've felt this way. There have been other examples with Canada basketball, with other Canadian national teams, but in terms of like the disappointment, I'm going back to 2015 in the ALCS.
Okay, I pulled two a little bit more recent Blue Jays memories. The 2015 ALCS, like I wasn't living in Toronto during that. I was at university in the States, so I was consuming it kind of like a little bit less as a Toronto fan. So I don't know if my memories were as vibrant as they were for 2023 and 2022. Failures in the wild card, I mean, they almost rival each other. There's the Mariners one, which I remember I was the in-arena host for the Leafs during this game, and it was just down the road, and the Springer and Bo collision happened, and we're doing these live hits, like, in the arena, and I remember, I think I said, like, the Jays were up 7-something at this point. They had a 7-run lead, and during one of our hits, the other in-arena host and myself were like, well, like, vibes are good in here, and they're good down the road to the Rogers Center, like, Blue Jays are up 7, whatever the score was, and then we have to go do another hit about 10 minutes later at the next intermission, and it was like, don't look at the Blue Jays score. And I just couldn't believe what was happening. The Springer Bow collision, the 7-run comeback, Teo hit 2 home runs. Like, that was a disaster of all disasters against the Mariners. And then last year with the Barrios pull in the wild cards against the Twins, like, that was like the unforced error that we all talked about all offseason about, oh, the calculators in the front office and stuff. And, like, I felt like those were just, like, heart-wrenching defeats. And that's what I came back to when I thought about today. And it's hard to compare, like, one is ending, you know, your wild card berth, and one is ending an Olympic opportunity. But the Jays were my first reaction to, what was the worst I've felt lately as a sports fan?
Yeah.
And I had a couple Blue Jays offers.
Yeah, the Blue Jays have definitely had offerings over the last decade. I mean, every Canadian NHL team or most Canadian NHL teams have had this moment, right? Mm-hmm. 2011 with the Canucks. You know, the Edmonton Oilers have had 2 Game 7 losses in the Stanley Cup Final in the last 2 decades. Mm-hmm. The Maple Leafs have had a ton of brutal losses, 2013, 4-1. That's obviously one of them, and Calgary had the game winner in 2005, Martin Jelena, but we didn't have video replay back then. So, like, each respective NHL team, most of them have had that moment as well. Bills have had moments. Canada's had moments.
Like, Nagano
1998 was a big moment.
I'm a tortured Bills fan, Leafs fan, Blue Jays fan, Canada basketball fan.
Yeah.
I thought of on the women's side, I thought of watching Canada United States gold medal Olympics in Pyeongchang 2018. the game was at like 2 or 3 in the morning at this point because of the time difference. And all of my friends were up because Laura Stacey, mm-hmm. my best friend, she made the Olympics for the first time and that she's in the gold medal game. And all of our classmates were like live streaming it together, watching it. And they lost in a shootout, which is pathetic that there should be a shootout in the gold medal game, which no longer exists. And should never be a thing that you determine a gold medal with. And they lost the gold in a shootout. And one of the Lamoureux twins scored. And I remember being like, oh, my God, I hate these girls. And it was just awful. It was awful. And it was awful because I was friends with the girls, but also because, you know, the Americans, they came back and the girls won the next one.
See, I was going to say it's not so bad because they had won so many beforehand, right?
But no, it was worse. I was like, I wanted them to win every game.
And that's true. Well, clearly, you want to win on that stage, but if your best friend is suddenly there, the other ones don't mean as much, right?
Unique one, for sure.
Like, it's a little bit unique. But I'll just say before we bring in JP Morosi, the quarterfinals, any quarterfinal is such like a treacherous sports mm-hmm. ground. Because I remember watching in 2010, it was Canada-Russia, before Sidney Crosby, before the Golden Goal, Canada-Russia. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going well, and all of a sudden you have Russia. And you're like, this could be the most devastating thing ever, where the Olympics are finally in Canada, and we have this team that's supposed to win. We're still thinking about 2006 in Turin. Like, it was setting up to be so awful, because you wouldn't even play for a medal, and they blew the doors off Russia, and it was like it was almost compares for me to the Golden Goal, mm-hmm. because it felt like it was so much nervous energy going into that game, and it was such a release when they blew the doors off them that it felt like that was the win right there. The quarterfinals can be the hump that either gets you mm-hmm. or propels you. And unfortunately for Canada today, losing in the quarterfinals, and for Canada soccer mm-hmm. over the weekend, losing in the quarterfinals, it ends with a thud and it allows for no opportunity to redeem yourself, no bronze medal game. It just ends. And then that's part of the reason why it was so devastating today.
All right. We'll regroup on some more Canada basketball with Arash Madani at 6:30. He's going to join us from Paris to give us the sights and scenes on what was a really disappointing day for a Canadian team in Paris. Hopefully the Blue Jays can redeem us. Oh, they got a big one against the Orioles, a homestand starting here tonight. Let's bring in John Morosi of MLB Network joining us. John, how's it going?
I'm doing well, Ailish and Justin. How are you both?
Oh, we're doing all right. A lot to go through. I mean, we've had some highs and lows in Paris, of course. You know, win and hammer, like, just put us in the running for the best ever throwing country and we could do it. But basketball obviously was a disappointing one for our Canadians today. But we will shift to some baseball because I don't think we've talked since after the trade deadline, or it's been kind of a whirlwind here with the Olympics taking over our energy. But the dust has settled. Jays were the big sellers. And I guess the next way to pivot the next 2 months for me is to ask you, like, what's the most important storyline for the Blue Jays to follow throughout the end of the season, out of contention, lots of new faces? Like, what should we be focusing on?
I think it's to look at certainly both the prospects who have been promoted, most notably Lo Perfido, obviously seeing De Los Santos get his chance at the major league level as well. And then I think just sort out who are going to be the players that the Jays can trust in 2025 and beyond. I think Yadiel Rodriguez, I thought his start over the weekend was good. You can tell he's still just trying to build up his overall workload and innings count to be able to be a consistent starter. But I'm pretty optimistic about what he'll be able to bring to the Jays going forward. And I think, too, the Jays are one of the teams that I believe executed pretty well mm-hmm. at the trade deadline. I know that there was certainly some disappointment about the way the season has gone overall. But the biggest takeaway for me, Ailish and Justin, is that the Jays were able to bring back enough young talent at the deadline that they did not have to go down the line too much of contemplating a massive Vladdy trade or trading away Bassett or Gossman. I think the moves they made were impactful enough that you can now begin to conceptualize how this team could look and at least having a better start at the year in 2025 and then seeing where things go with Vladdy and Bo. Because I'm of the mind that unless something really dramatic happens this offseason, that you've made your choice that Vladdy's going to be on this team on opening day, and he really should be. I think this is this is what you would like to see happen. And then if you've got to reevaluate it at the trade deadline, go for it. But I would just like to see this team take one more good look at it and try to go for it in 25. And then if you've got to take things apart, it's more of a trade deadline 2025 conversation as opposed to a December 2024 conversation.
For some people, John, the biggest storyline over the next 2 months will be Joey Votto and whether or not he will be a member of the Blue Jays, take some hacks for his hometown team. I feel like this is like a 50-50 proposition at best still. It seems like no one's really tipping their hand. What's going to determine whether or not this happens? Are there tax implications and financial reasons why the Jays may or may not do this? Like, what is potentially standing in the way of Joey Votto donning a Blue Jays jersey finally?
Yeah, no, it's a very, very fair question. I mean, he's obviously had just a fairly limited amount of at-bats so far, just 19 games in the regular season across three levels. So I think it's a very slow progression, I think, for Joey. And we also have to realize the minor league season is over in about 3 weeks, three, 4 weeks. So I think that they are in some ways running out of road to get him ready to be a major league hitter again. But I think that he would not still be playing in the minor leagues if this was not a possibility of him joining the Jays at the end of the season. And they were able to move enough money at the deadline from a luxury tax perspective and other different allocations. Yeah, there might still be some calculations. I'm sure everybody's probably at Rogers Center. They probably know exactly what they can afford in terms of calling him up and making it work with luxury tax threshold. There have probably been a lot of calculators utilized in figuring out exactly what that day is. So that might be some element of it. But I do think for Jays fans, at the end of what's been a really trying year, they'd love to see Joey Votto play. They would love to see him play and end his career as a Blue Jay. And I'm sure that if there's a way to make it work and not significantly alter the financial trajectory of the franchise for years to come, they'll probably find a way to make this work. Again, if his body is ready, if he feels like he's ready. I think that's been one thing that I really admire about Joey, is that he didn't want to just come up for the sake of coming up. If he's going to come up, it's going to be because he thinks he can help. And I realize the team is long gone from the pennant race, but he still has that level of respect for the organization, for the major leagues, that he's going to want to make sure that he's there as a contributing member before that actually happens.
I said this a couple of weeks ago when we first heard that Joey Votto was maybe going to take baseball practices again. The Reds play the Jays at the Rogers Center on Monday, August 19th. So I would be circling that one as, like, you know,
wow.
If I was a betting person, John, I would English. Be looking at that one. What do you think?
Excellent, excellent point. And I think that that's that sounds like the right story to tell. Mm-hmm. What a moment that would be. So I'm going to sign up for that date too, Ailish.
Okay.
I love that. A great suggestion on your part.
Okay, there we go. So we might see the future here. I guess a big positive we've been tracking, Vladdy again with another crazy week, an AL player of the week for us, leading MLB in extra base hits, total bases, average slugging, and OPS since the All-Star break. All of MLB's leading in all those categories. So I guess, like, the thing with Vladdy is he has these outbursts, or he has these seasons, and then he has these lows. So, like, how close to the real Vlad are we seeing? I know that, you know, those types of weeks are not always repeatable, but are we, you know, 80% Vlad, 50% Vlad, and how much can we dream on it?
Oh, I think this, to me, Ailish, is probably getting closer to that best season that he's had other than the best season he's had, right? So if you set aside the MVP, the almost MVP year, this is probably about the best that we've seen him over a sustained stretch. And I'm a believer that he'll be able to basically maintain this level, we hope, into next season, because there will be a lot at stake for him with the contract and everything else. So this is a very focused version of Vlad. You're right. I think he's been formidable in every way. I think even defensively too, he's continued, I believe, to be a complete ball player in that respect. And I think that the Jays will look at what he's able to do and project that this is, and again, maybe not at the best player in baseball level, but more or less what he's been able to do that he can carry this forward into 2025. I think that for a long time, and we're familiar with the conversation surrounding him, where people said, well, he's never been able to do this since the year that was split between all the various minor league stadiums, and that was a big part of the discourse. Well, he's kind of dashed that over the last little bit, which I think is really encouraging for the Jays in that respect, and I think is a really bright note for them looking ahead to the future.
To be on the best player in baseball level, he'd have to be on Aaron Judge's level, it seems. This Aaron Judge season, just, you know, rank it for us. Or where does it compare, or how does it compare, John, to the greatest that you've ever covered?
It is, well, I would say right up there with the time that Aaron Judge had 62 home runs 2 years ago,
yeah.
which is, and that to me is when you consider what the true all-time greats do, is they perform at this level for a sustained period of time. And I think that honestly is the distinction that you would draw between Aaron and Vlad. The Judge has done it just at a higher level for a longer sweep of time. Vladdy has been good for pockets. Aaron has been the dominant offensive player of the last, you can call it the last decade, basically off and on. I mean, but he's been that guy. And we had a game in Philly recently, and just to see what he was able to do that night. It was a two-homer game, and I was sitting there in the camera well watching it all happen, and I just said to myself, he's probably going to homer again. And he did. It's just, you almost laugh about it when you're on the air, because he just does it so consistently. And I don't know if I ever actually told you on the air my story about him from the night that he hit 62 in 2022. So for a moment, indulge me if you'd like. We were interviewing him on the field, and he actually, we were getting our camera shot set up, and we started interviewing him. So this is probably like interview 4 or 5 from the night when he sets the record. I mean, he's, at this point in time, he's been at the center of the focal point of the sports world for weeks now, exhausted probably with the pressure. He finally gets it done. This is like probably the fourth or fifth interview he's done that night. It's on MLB Network now. We were starting to put it to tape to air like minutes later, and we had a camera issue. So we had to stop. Okay, so I'm standing there next to Aaron Judge, and our producer says, John, you got to stop. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not good. This is the night of 62 home runs. And we're just telling Aaron Judge we had a camera problem. We got to start again. And you could not believe, he's like, John, don't worry about it. It's all good. Like, we can start again. So like that's the graciousness of the man. Okay, like you realize in that moment, he didn't have to stop. He didn't have to be as gracious as he was. And that just tells you who he is. And I just think that it's those moments where you get a glimpse into the character of the person. And I tell you that story to communicate. There's a reason why he's so great, and it's that he's a truly great gentleman on top of everything else.
Well, I'm going to go completely in the other direction here, from the best player in baseball to the worst team in professional sports, I would say. The White Sox on a 21-game losing streak. They're very close to tying and possibly passing the longest losing streak in MLB history. What do you think it's like to be a White Sox player, broadcaster, fan? Like, how does this work? Like, how do people just show up and keep on trucking? It's tough.
It is tough. And there was an image yesterday. I think it got some amplification on social media of Miguel Vargas sitting in the dugout looking rather forlorn. And it said the caption was, this is what happens when you get traded from the Dodgers to the White Sox. That's tough. And I don't know where to go with in terms of like where the hope is, because honestly right now there's not a lot. I mean, I try to be a pretty optimistic person. I would just be lying to you if I said I saw reasons for hope right now with this team. And I think it's, you're seeing players go other places and just play better. Their spirits are lifted because they're just in a place that's not the White Sox. And Michael Kopech, I saw him pitch last night. He looked great with the Dodgers in person. There's not a lot of hope there. Pedro Grifol, really good baseball person. The questions about his future there, I think, are very real, just because the depths of this futility are profound. I trust me, and I'll be honest. I know what futility looks like. You're talking to somebody who was the quarterback of an 0-9 football team his senior year. So I know what it looks like to just lose all the time. And it was hard for me as a 17-year-old. It's probably even harder for the people that are professionals. And, yeah, my heart goes out to them, but I don't know where the positivity will come from in this moment.
Whew, well said. John, before we let you go, I know that today was a tough day with news about Billy Beane, who passed away, and I know he was a friend of yours at Trailblazer and a part of the MLB community. So if you wanted to share with us, you know, what his lasting legacy will be like, and I know you had a really great tweet up, and I'll encourage our viewers to go look at it as well, but just a couple words on Billy.
Yeah, Ailish, a dear friend of mine, and that is certainly, I'm not alone in saying that. And mm-hmm. He's the friend among those that I've had in baseball who I was just so excited to see him at an event. Because, and actually the one is coming up that we would often talk at, which is the Little League Classic in Williamsport. Mm-hmm. And he was so thoughtful in any venue on any topic, whether it was baseball or otherwise. Like I went to him for wisdom, and I would always leave those conversations feeling better. And I love that he was such a part of those Little League Classics at the Little League World Series, because that event encapsulated so much of why he was such a, and why he, I think, will always remain such a dear member of the baseball family, because he knew where he could make his impacts. He could make his impacts speaking to current Major League players, but also just as importantly, the next generation. And I think that we think about where we are as a society and LGBTQ plus acceptance, and certainly we've made a lot of progress. We also have a long way to go. And I think that he, wherever you were in that continuum, he would meet you there. Whether you were someone that was an advocate or a member of the community itself right away, he was there with you. If you were someone, and there were instances of intolerance, certainly in the baseball community in the last decade, he would connect with those who were the offending parties and find a way to make things better. And he was someone that did not judge. He was there to help, and he was there to listen. And I think that as we think about how slow change can be in sports and in society, you need people who are both patient and will also roll up their sleeves and work. And he did both of those things. And so I when I think about what an advocate looks like, what a friend looks like, what someone who's in the fight looks like, it's him. And I just think that one of the best things that Commissioner Selig did a decade ago was bring him on, because whenever moments came up where you'd want thought leadership, the first thing that I thought, and a lot of people in baseball thought, is what does Billy think about this? Because I want that perspective. And I just hope that he'd gone too soon, 60 years old. I hope that his wisdom that he shared with us has now become a part of our own collective wisdom on this, such that while we are going to feel his absence horribly, that we have that piece of him with us now, and that reflexively we will know how would Billy have responded to this, and how Billy would have responded to this was invariably the right way to respond to this. And it was always without judgment. It was always with a ton of grace and empathy and listening. And so I'm heartbroken today that my friend is gone, but I have a ton of wisdom and hopefully some skills that he's given me to be a better citizen. And that's at the end of the day what we're all trying to be. And so I just hope that I've shared that with my family and my friends, and I'm going to miss him. He's an absolute titan in our industry, and I appreciate you asking me about him today, Ailish.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That beautifully said. It's too bad I never got a chance to meet him personally, but I think that story and that legacy, we can all try to continue to live that in our lives, and however that takes you, whether it's sports or broadcasting or just regular life, as you said, as a citizen, that's a really good way to live your life. John, we appreciate your time. We'll let you go. And we'll definitely chat with you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Justin. Really appreciate it. Thanks so much today.
That's John Morosi of MLB Network and joining us ahead of Jays Orioles. And that's a 7 p.m. start on SportsCenter and SportsCenter 590, The Fan tonight.
Yeah, let's tee that up on the other side. We're also talking to Arash Madani on the other side. But yeah, we'll get to the Blue Jays and the Orioles and the rest of the Olympic conversation with Arash after the break.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Pregame Sportsnet Plus and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I believe we're on Sportsnet Plus all week long with the NBA starting and the Olympics.
We can cede to the National Bank Open.
We'll
for
let
a
them
week.
Have it. You know
it's
what?
A big event.
This is like alt. We're like the alt cast of the other things going on in the world. We'll keep you covered with some Paris Olympics. We mentioned it today. Cameron Rogers, the hammer throw gold. That's both golds for us. I think that we might have a dynasty starting.
Yeah.
Canadian throwers.
Definitely a monopoly of the hammer throws. But that's really exciting. And I do feel bad, again, for Cameron Rogers, because at least in my world, and I feel like my world would be reflected in other people's worlds, that it's like it's a little of the shine taken away, because Ethan Katzberg, he got a lot of shine.
That was sweet.
And deservedly so. And Cameron Rogers deserves the same shine. But this was a disappointing day, I think, for Canada at the Olympics, despite the brilliance of Cameron Rogers.
We've got Andre DeGrasse advancing to the semis in the 200 meter. Canada will continue on in the beach volleyball race as well.
And we still got Phil Wizard.
Phil Wizard's coming up, but Brooke Henderson teeing off very early in the morning. That's around the corner. So there's still medals to be won, hopefully for Canada, but the basketball result, France 82, Canada 73. It wasn't great. I just want to touch on one thing about the White Sox before we bring Arash in, because we were just talking about that with John Morosi.
Okay.
The White Sox are on a 21-game losing streak. The modern-day record is 23 by the Phillies way back when. But the things that have happened since the White Sox last won a game, you can add to this.
Let's do it. Yeah.
The last time they won a game was July 10th. I had a birthday. I went to Nashville and back, and then I went to Bulgaria and back.
So two vacations during a single losing streak for a professional sports team. Okay, got it.
There was the Trump assassination attempt.
Yeah, that was a couple weeks back.
There was the Euro final, the Copa final, the MLB All-Star game.
Three big sporting events.
Biden dropped out of the presidential race.
Another huge political
moment.
The
Olympics began.
There's a fourth sporting event.
And might wrap up. There were two no-hitters thrown.
If it wraps up, we'll get to what? 27 games?
Something like that.
So a new record.
Two no-hitters were thrown.
Okay.
And the moon fully orbited the Earth once.
That's wild.
What else has happened? The stock market basically crashed. Like,
and rebounded a little bit.
And came back.
rebound.
This sample size is crazy when you try to realize the last time the White Sox won a game.
I could not imagine being a fan of the Chicago White Sox and being like, you know what, I'm going tonight. Oh, maybe.
They're
actually,
facing,
maybe there's reason, because at least you'll see the most exciting game of the year if they win it.
They're facing the, I almost said the White Sox, they're facing the Athletics tonight, who are not good either, but they're fine compared. But it's Ross Stripling on the mound. And poor Ross Stripling, you're going to be the guy that the White Sox win, but his ERA isn't very good, so this could be their chance.
Okay, maybe we should look at that as at best bets before we close out the show.
All right, let's bring in Arash Madani. He's joining us from Paris, somewhere in France. Arash, how's it going?
I am outside the Louvre.
Oh, my goodness. That's beautiful.
It's the classiest shot we've ever seen on the show.
The Canadian basketball team didn't make a masterpiece. Yeah. It was not a masterpiece from the Canadian basketball team, so we tried to class it up a little bit.
No, it was not. In fact, my take yesterday, Arash, was that this was the last chance for Canada to have a great games, that the result of the men's basketball team would kind of paint our complete portfolio in Paris. And yeah, there's other things going on. We won a gold today with Cameron Rogers. That's all great stuff. But it feels like it was the last chance for me to think it was as good as the last one. Do you feel that same way?
I wouldn't go there, but what I will say is this. The Canadian way of explaining what happened tonight is disappointing. Mm. Tonight was an embarrassment. Tonight was terrible. Tonight they fell on their face. Tonight they didn't show up. Tonight they were out everything by France. They were outplayed. They were out-hustled. They were out-rebounded. They were out-worked. They were out-everything. Canada couldn't do anything in the first quarter. It took Shea a quarter and a half to get going, and then he started to cook, and nobody else did. Jamal Murray's probably in witness protection from an Olympic basketball tournament standpoint. It was as bad as it got, and Jordy Fernandez, after the head coach, said, offensively, that was as selfish a game as we've played. You know, I don't know what else to say, guys. It was as terrible and brutal and all those things as possible.
What does that mean, the selfish comment? Do you think that's pointed? Do you think that's targeted? Like, I don't know if I saw selfishness. I saw poor basketball.
14 assists, 14 turnovers.
So who's that on?
Like everybody. Like, okay. The NCAA would call that a lack of institutional control. It got to the point where nothing was working. France did such a great job of preventing SGA from getting the ball. Then defensively, they were just clogging things up, and the Canadians got scattered, and they just they weren't able to get into any kind of half-court rhythm. They weren't able to start their offense. They weren't able to get into sets. And guys started to press, and guys started to rush, and guys tried to do a little too much on their own. And the next thing you know, they're down 15 or whatever it was at the half. And after three quarters, they've put up 50 points. 50 points in three quarters. That's just not going to cut it in a knockout game at an Olympics.
I love that you did the air quotes around, like, the word disappointing, because I think we're quick to see what other people are saying online, and a lot of that is disappointing. But a lot of it was about the reffing, and I want to get your opinion on the way that the foul discrepancy was, and maybe even because I assume that you could hear the loud and crazy crowd, how much that affects the players in the performance today.
Okay. Yes, the crowd affects the whistle. Mm-hmm. That is basketball at any level, any time. But the officiating was not why Canada started 3 of 15 on triples. Mm-hmm. The officiating is not why Canada missed free throws when they got the game within five in the fourth quarter and they went to the stripe to attempt two shots to make it a one-possession game. The officiating is not why deep into the third quarter you look up and you're like, all right, Shea's got 25 and the second leading scorer has seven. So even Fernandez tried to discuss the foul disparity. I wasn't hearing that at all. This was a poor performance top to bottom, and they were looking for a spark from anyone in that first half. Like, Jordy used 11 guys in the first half. Can anybody do something to ignite us and get us going? And Canada's lack of size showed. That wasn't why they lost. The officiating wasn't why they lost. Everything is why they lost. It was just a really, really poor performance at the ball yard, start to finish, up and down in every facet other than SGA.
Was there a coaching mismatch tonight? I mean, there was a lot of Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray wasn't working, but it looked like Jordy Fernandez was pretty determined to see if it would eventually work. And, I mean, it's Jamal Murray. He's an NBA champion. He's one of the best players on this team, or supposed to be one of the best players on this team. But this was square peg, round hole, it
on
felt like.
On this planet.
Yeah. And then, you know.
I wouldn't say that.
What would you say?
Who do you go with instead?
Well, Andrew Nemhard had some. If you're having that sort of night, I'm just saying, with Rudy Gobert not playing, we figured it out that was, you know, he had surgery yesterday, and that's completely different. But we were looking at France making adjustments, having a game plan, executing it, coming in, and yeah, Canada went with its best lineup on paper, but it didn't work, and I didn't see many adjustments down the stretch. From you said 11 guys in the first half, that's fine. Partly because hey, they had to throw some bodies in front of guys with foul trouble. But it just felt like Jamal Murray, they were determined to make it work, and it was shown over and over again tonight that it wasn't working.
Yeah, but nobody did. Nobody performed. You know, Lou Dort showed a lot of effort. Lou Dort was there. RJ Barrett had some wide-open looks, and he missed. And Nembhard, I thought, who was so good against Spain, was invisible tonight.
Yeah,
there,
he was.
There was nobody showed up. And yet, Jamal Murray was bad, of course, yes. But I don't think that there was somebody on the floor tonight were on the bench. Like, they tried Nickeil Alexander-Walker, but even coming into this game, as great as a defender that Alexander-Walker is, and he is. Like, he's... It's exactly what you need on your team as a complementary part. If your stars aren't knocking down shots, there's nothing you can do. Like, that's basketball. I understand the premise and the thought, but in reality, if you're not going to ride Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jamal Murray, then what are you doing?
Arash, 2028, still, you know, a couple of years away, but like a Zach Edey in this situation, if he had played for Canada at the Olympics, some of these names that we might be looking forward to in a couple of years, like, do you think the Canada basketball is in a good spot? Do you think that there's still, like, a promising curve ahead, or was this, like, the best Team Canada we were going to see?
No, like, they can still be a lot better in LA. You know, Shea's going to be 4 years older, and Murray and Doubt Wiggins is in the mix. Look, 4 years from now, there may be a freshman going into the NCAA that we don't really know about. Olivier Rioux is 7'6". He's from Montreal. He just enrolled at the University of Florida. What's he going to be 4 years from now? Yeah, what may Zach Edey be? What's RJ Barrett going to evolve into? What, Benedict Mathurin? We can just list all the guys, but you just never know. You never know about health. You never know about contracts. You never know where they're going to be. The unfortunate part for Canada about this, Ailish, is that they had a yellow brick road to the gold medal game. Mm-hmm. USA and Serbia can go beat the living snot out of each other on Thursday, and one of them is going to be left for Saturday night. And Canada, France, and Germany, and then the gold medal game. And I don't know if they got ahead of themselves a little bit. I don't know. None of the guys had explanations for why they were as bad as they were, especially in the first quarter and also in the second. And then by the time they tried to play the catch-up game in the second half, it was just too big a deficit. It was too late, and they missed free throws. So, maybe L.A., but it was a damn good chance here in Paris.
Yeah, it definitely felt like it was there, and I think they're still going to have that opportunity. Maybe they don't have the yellow brick road, but they can still follow that path to a gold medal game. But yeah, it depends on a few things. It depends on some development. It you know, France easily exposing the deficiencies of this team tonight showed that they still have to bring in some bodies that are going to be capable and that can do something other than play in the backcourt. But Shai was the guy, and Shai still had a great tournament. Did his stock still rise a lot here? Did this put a damper on the party around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Because, yeah, he doesn't get all that much shine with the Oklahoma City Thunder, but these three games against high-level competition in front of the world on the world stage, did Shea's status take a jump over the last couple weeks?
I don't think Shea's status changed. Shea's a top three player in the NBA, and that's being... that's being conservative. To me, a little biased because I share the same passport, sure. To me, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the best basketball player in the world today. He's better than Jokic. He's better than Embiid. He's obviously, at this stage of their careers, better than KD, better than LeBron, better than Steph. If Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was not playing in Oklahoma City, like if he was playing for the Knicks, Times Square would just be like these larger-than-life things all over the place. If he was in L.A., he would be on red carpets and in Hollywood movies all the time. There is not a deficiency in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's game. And I often talk about, when evaluating talent, like just remove all the logos, remove the numbers, remove the names on the back, and just kind of watch a grainy black-and-white film and just evaluate that talent. And we've never seen anything like Nikola Jokic. I understand that. But I just think the miles on Jokic by next season are going to catch up with him. And to me, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, barring injury, is the MVP of the NBA next year.
Arash, before we let you go, we only have a couple minutes, but I want to ask you, just like Olympics-wise, what's brought you the most joy as someone that's getting to see all the stories up close and personal?
Well, the Macintosh story is incredible. And it's funny. It's incredible, Ailish, not just because it's three golds and a silver. Like, think about how absurd that is. It's how she's done it. The 400 IM, she crushed everybody by 5 seconds. She actually said that I smiled under the water coming home for the last 50 meters. Then you think about the 200 IM, where she's behind a meter and a quarter in that final 50. And she chases down the competition to touch the wall first. It's the way McIntosh is doing it. The other one, and I'm a little biased about this one too, because I grew up in rural Nova Scotia. Mm. I'm from Truro. There's a boxer, Wyatt Sanford, from Kennetcook, Nova Scotia. Now, unofficially, population 473. But at Finley Park on Sunday morning at 7:30, more than 1,000 people from Hants County, Nova Scotia, brought lawn chairs and wore red and white, and they made a makeshift stage, and they put a screen up there. And as a community, they all watched Wyatt Sanford get hosed by the judges and win a bronze medal.
Yeah.
And to me, that... And afterwards, I asked Wyatt, I said, hey, man, 5 years ago, you were fighting at the East Hants Sportsplex. And today, here you are, winning an Olympic medal. And he said, I know this is going to sound crazy, but he said, I enjoy 2019, maybe even more than this, because I did it around my community, I did it around my village, around all the people who have supported me and helped me get to this point. And we get so caught up in the Shays of the world and the Jamals of the world, the DeGrasses of the world, the Summers of the world, that we sometimes forget about, of the 338 athletes in the delegation that is Team Canada, how many Wyatt Sanfords are out there in so many of the sports that are in the shadows, and so many of the athletes that are in the shadows who get next to no funding and make no money. And as one of the rowers on the 8-woman rowing team that won silver said, can't even afford a candy bar. That to me was, you know, among the great moments so far of Paris 2024 for Team Canada.
I love it, and hopefully there's more to come. Also, one of my best friends and former teammates was born in Truro, so good people in Truro. Only the best.
Mm. Yeah, people usually stop off the exit.
Yep, I've been there. Yes, I've used that bathroom.
But there's a lot more to Truro than that. So who is your teammate, Ailish?
Catherine Burgess. Burgess family.
Catherine Burgess, the Burgess family. There's a few. There's a Burgess family that they're very successful curlers also. I don't know if it's the same ones or not.
She never mentioned it, but...
Shout out Craig and his daughter.
Okay.
There you go.
Could be related. It's a small little spot.
They've used the bathroom.
Used the bathroom. Arash, we appreciate you checking in. Enjoy the rest of Paris, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That's Arash Madani in a beautiful sights of Paris.
And killing it for us at Sportsnet.
Yes,
that's a good reminder, right? Because, again, to start the show, I can't shake that this whole thing was a disappointment. Despite summer, we've got the Northern Star Award winner, but we've got the North Star in summer. Mm-hmm. We've got this mega star, mega performance. She lives up to expectation. But I'm trying to find what's there after that. Mm-hmm. What should I be excited about? I needed the soccer team. Didn't happen. I needed the basketball team. Where is it going to come from? Yeah, a little Wyatt Sanford. He can supply it in some ways. You need those reminders. That's what the Olympics is all about. Unfortunately, you like to mix that with the stories that get national attention, international attention elsewhere as well. When you can have it all, that's great. But we undoubtedly, inevitably, will have great stories every time an Olympic delegation goes to the Olympics.
We've got 1 minute to wrap up our show before we send you to Jay's Orioles. Let's do some quick best bets that come from that game. I believe it will be an over game tonight. I think it's going to be a lot of runs scored at the Rogers Centre tonight. So I'm going over 8.5 tonight. And I think we're going to see a Vladdy home run as well.
Yeah, it's a green light when the Orioles are in town, right? Chris Bassitt has been pretty good against home runs all year. 86 pitchers have given up more, but he's allowed 4 in his last 3 starts. Orioles lead the majors in homers, so I'm chasing some Orioles homers. Gunnar Henderson, Jackson Holliday, Ryan Mountcastle, Adley Rutschman.
It's always Ryan Mountcastle.
Anthony Santander, all big-time plus money to hit a home run. I'm probably playing them all.
We'll
see where the chips lie.
Okay, I love that. That's up next after us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Canada's medal count, 18. Let's hope we get a couple more. Let's get in the 20s.
I need a couple more.
Let's break 20.
Despite Wyatt Sanford and that plea from Arash, I still need more.
We can break 20. We're going to get one in volleyball, I hope. Brooke Henderson can get one.
Count your chickens.
DeGrasse can get one. There's three.
There's a couple assumptions there. A lot of ifs. We need something surprise. We need something spectacular.
Okay.
It can still happen.
Breaking. There you go. Breaking. We'll get one. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for watching.